Hi, I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer of Diverse Voices Book Review. Today's show is going to be broken into two parts. On the first part, we feature Richard Santos, editor of A Night of Screams, and Ruben de Gallardo, one of the contributors to A Night of Screams. In part two, we feature Flor Salcedo, another contributor to A Night of Screams. So be sure to keep listening once the interview with Richard Santos and Ruben de Gallardo ends. Welcome to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay. My guests today are Richard Z. Santos, editor of A Night of Screams, Latino Horror Stories, and Ruben de Gallardo, who is a contributing writer, has one of those horror stories in A Night of Screams. Richard is the author of one of the best debuts of the year, as according to Crime Reads, Trust Me, back in, I believe, 2021. And he is also the executive director of Austin Batcave, an organization that provides creative writing workshops to students in under-resourced areas. Ruben's debut literary novel, The Family Izquierdo, published in 2022 by W.W. Norton, is a Texas Institute of Letters Best Fiction Award finalist. Is it still a finalist?
Yeah, it's a finalist. Yeah, the winner was chosen. A great book.
So it was a finalist. And it was also a Kirkus Reviews Best Book of 2022. So Richard and Ruben, welcome back to Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Upton. Excited to be here.
So Ruben, I was reading through and by the way, Richard, having people describe their stories and their experience in the back of the book, actually, I love that. Makes it a whole lot easier to figure out where the author is coming from. Right. So I know Ruben had never written a horror story before, a short story before. So Richard, have you delved in that range of writing horror stories
before? Myself as a writer?
Yes.
Yeah, I have. And a lot of fiction that kind of toes that line between weird and fantastical and like horror, which is a lot of what's happening out there right now. A lot of the pieces in this collection kind of toe that line between, is this horror or is this some sort of like fantasy, uncanny fiction as a genre that comes out or is a label I hear sometimes. But yeah, I've attempted a little bit of stuff here and there, either with characters where strange things are happening around them, and or some stuff that's more traditional horror with like ghosts and creatures and stuff coming at them. It's fun.
So how did you
to write?
So tell me the story how you recruited Ruben. How did you recruit Ruben?
Yeah, I emailed him. No, I mean, that's true. That is kind of like the long story short. But, you know, I Arte Publico gave me like permission to just recruit whoever I wanted. And they threw out a couple suggestions and I reached out to some people. But really, it was all up to me. And so I knew that I wanted some established horror writers, people like V. Castro. I knew I wanted some strangers to me. So I had an open call for submissions. And that's where like Flor Salcedo's story, for example, came from, but several others in here as well. And I knew I also wanted writers that weren't really known for horror, even if they had kind of dabbled in adjacent genres before. I knew I also wanted some stories from people who hadn't made their name in horror, like Ruben. And so when I'm looking at my bookshelf and I'm thinking about who could be a valuable voice to add in there, yeah, Ruben was absolutely one of the first ones.
And you mentioned Arte Publico, who was the publisher of A Night of Screams, and they're actually based at the University of Houston. So Ruben, you had never written a zombie story, a horror story before. Was there any trepidation when Richard called on you to contribute to this collection?
No, I was really excited because it was a challenge. And first of all, thank you, Richard, for reaching out to me. And I was very honored for that opportunity. And you know, in my work, there's elements of folklore. There's, a couple of the stories have some horror elements. A couple of the chapters in the family schedule maybe have some horror elements in there, supernatural for sure. But like straight up, I would say straight up horror, definitely, that this is my first foray into it. The other part of it for me was, I read a lot of different stuff that I don't write in. And I think if you talk to any writer, that's probably the case. They dabble into different kinds of genres that they don't write in. So like, I don't read horror per se as much as like I used to, but I do read science fiction. And I watch, I watch like my big jam. And when he said that, he asked me horror story, like I knew exactly what I wanted to do because I love zombie apocalypse stories. I just love, I've Walking Dead. I've watched that, I've watched Black Sun, I think is the name of the show on Netflix. And so when he, invited me to submit, exactly like I just said, I had a story in my head that was ready to go. And I had kind of started it off one way, but I repurposed it for this anthology.
So, Richard, when you saw the story of migrants that was contributed by Ruben, I will tell you what I thought. I loved the way it subverted the power structure between the United States and Mexico, because we have a whole history of basically the United States being the imperial power that it is. But to know at the end of times, during the apocalypse, Ruben, you actually subverted that.
Yeah.
I would imagine this isn't the first time you sort of subverted that power structure before.
Yeah.
In other stories.
Yeah. And I think, because I'm a border writer, the border is ever present in everything that I do. But I think this was probably the first time that, if I've written anything political, this would probably be the most political story I've ever written. And what you talk about subverting it, the way I work as a writer is I always have the end in mind and I always build up to it. So I had this image of I'll give it away. You can read it, but I had this image of the wall. And if you live where I live, you can drive around. I mean, I can go 5 miles south of me and just drive along a military highway and the wall is right there. It's like real present. You see it all the time. And so I wanted to do something with that. And I had this image of people trying to cross the wall. But then it hit me. I'm like, how can I, because I think what good fiction does is it subverts what your expectation is. And I think I wrote it in such an open-ended way is that people are filling in the blanks, is that people are trying to go north. The whole time you're reading about these migrants is they're trying to go north because, that's where the safety is. But as you read the story, it's the inverse has happened, is that they're trying to go south. And so what, as I mentioned in the story there, is that what was intended to keep people from the south coming to the north actually has the opposite effect. And it does the opposite in that it goes both ways in a way.
So, Richard, let me get back to you. What did you think of Migrants when you saw it?
I thought it was great. I mean, I loved the title from the start. I was like, okay, this just a very simple Migrants, which I like simple titles that those tend to like draw me in because it feels like, oh, how is this going to be read? Like, who is migrating in this? And then in reading it, yeah, I loved it from the start. I liked the solo character at the start of it. I think that's always a great setup, especially for a horror story with someone by themselves doing really important things and to them and to their life. And in a very, like, I think the description of like the land is great because the character is I guess basically securing some land and checking on different fortifications, and just the way Ruben describes the landscape and the character moving through it, I thought was really good. And then when the other characters start being introduced, kind of trying to talk about it without giving like everything away. The power dynamics, like we were saying, was really good. I thought the dialogue was really great. And I was excited we've already talked about here that it's a zombie story. I was excited to get a zombie story in the book in general. It was one of those like boxes in my head. This is like, God, I hope somebody sends a zombie story. Like, I didn't want to tell someone like, hey, can you write me a zombie story? Like, I didn't want to go that far with it. But I was just like, somebody better send me a zombie story. And Ruben did.
So Richard, having partaked in being a co-editor of a collection and seeing often editors of short story collections often contribute a story. I was curious, was that a conscious decision not to contribute a story because you want to make sure that all the stories featured the writers that you were recruiting?
Yeah, I went back and forth on that. I had a story that wasn't ready by my own deadlines, but that I could have been, I could have gotten it ready in time. And I went back and forth on that in terms of like, do I need to be in there? I've got an introduction and I've got like an editor's note. And plus like I feel like you can see my hand in the, like the layout, like the sequence and those author notes at the end. And yeah, at some point I was just like, okay, I don't think I really need to have a story in here. I kind of like, you know, maybe that wasn't the right decision. I don't know that there really was a right or wrong decision about that. But ultimately, I think, yeah, it's a good collection. And I would have loved to have been within it myself. But having put it together, I feel like, you know, my voice is in there for sure.
Now you have 18 stories in there and 4 poems. So let's talk about the decision to bring poems into this collection. What inspired you to say, I want that hybrid horror / strange word poetry added to the collection of stories?
Well, a few different things. Like the theme that I really approached Arte Publico with wasn't just a horror anthology, but a horror anthology of Latino writers built somewhat loosely around this theme of hybridity, of different things coming together, playing with that notion from Gloria Anzaldúa about the borderlands, the physical and psychic and emotional borderlands that have created this basically hybrid people that are European and white and Mexican and indigenous and Spanish and all of these different religions, Catholicism, local religions have just created this basically like the new mestiza, as she calls it in Borderlands, this hybrid group, which I think is just one of the fascinating things about being Hispanic, being Latino, being Latinx. We, you know, just the notion that there are so many different words to describe ourselves. I like Tejano, but I don't use it all the time. That's a sign of that hybridity also, that we're sort of unsettled in our own description amongst ourselves. So I also knew that hybridity is also kind of the cornerstone of horror in general, right? Like monsters are never just one thing, right? Like Michael Myers isn't just a guy with a knife. He's also this like silent monster, right? The alien in the Alien movies isn't just an alien. It's also kind of like a lizard and it's kind of like a bug and it's just, you can't quite identify it. And it just goes on and on from there. So playing on this notion of hybridity, I also knew that it would be pretty cool to have some poems in there also. And really I reached out to Ruben Quesada, Monica Teresa Ortiz, Cloud Cardona, and also Oscar Mancinas, knowing that it would be possible that that they would send poems. And I said, you can send me whatever. You can write a story. But like I knew like Cloud and Monica's works, for example. I knew their poetry chapbooks. But also I said a poem would be great too. And that kind of split the difference. Like Monica sent a prose piece, which I think is really cool. And then Cloud and Ruben Quesada sent in poems. And I was like, great, this is perfect. I wanted to keep kind of pushing the kind of expectations of what a horror anthology could include.
Ruben, as you mentioned earlier, you use a lot of folklore, supernatural elements in your last novel. How important do you think it is, Ruben, that this Mexican folklore, these stories continue to be represented throughout multiple genres of literature?
That's a great question, Hope. And for me, I think it's important because they're representative of, I mean, and you know, no culture is a monolith, right? But in a lot of ways, I think they're representative of us as a people. And so when you look at the breadth of work that's coming out, and you know, going back to Richard's comment about hybridity, is that when you look at the literature, it's almost like you have to make a conscious for a Mexican American, and I'm Chicano. For me as a Chicano author, I have to actually make a conscious choice to not include folklore. And so I think the default for, and I can only speak for myself as an author, but the default for me is to include those things. And so, you know, when you read Flor's piece and La Llorona's in there, there's been a reference to Llorona in both of my books. I mean, more so in my first book, Throw, but in my second book, you know, there is a reference to Llorona in there. I wrote a nonfiction essay for Texas Highways, where definitely, you know, I mentioned, and I love her story. I love how she subverts it, again, talking about La Llorona, how she subverts that legend. And I'll let her speak to that, of course, on the next piece, of course. But it's a conscious choice. So like going back to this story, you know, the easy thing for me to would have been to tell a Llorona story, a Chupacabra story, a Mano Peluda, the hairy hand that's going to come get you. It's going to tickle your toes, you know, under the bed. It would have been easier for me to do that. But I made a conscious choice to do something that was not dealing with folklore per se, but it was almost more realistic. I know zombies aren't real, but it was more realistic in that it wasn't dealing with supernatural as we see it in Mexican American literature. And so I, going back to the original, I think it's very important for us to keep these stories alive and to keep morphing them. And, you know, so as these stories go, you know, Flor's story is adding to that, you know, is adding to that thread of narrative that we have with these stories that, you know, we can't even trace them, you know. So you take La Llorona, some say it's an indigenous story, some say that it's a result of Spanish conquest in Mexico. So we can't really find out what the beginnings are, but by the same token, I don't think we can find out where the ending is either. And I think it's a continued thread, which I think is beautiful.
Richard, could you talk about The Boy Called Chupa by V. Castro? Because I had never heard of that folklore creature before.
The Chupacabra?
Yes.
Yeah, which also makes another appearance as well. Yeah, well, I do also want to say that V. Castro's most recent novel, The Haunting of Alejandra, also takes on the La Llorona mythos and like tries to, does a really great job of basically trying to explore its beginning in present and future. It's a really, really cool book. But yeah, so I'm glad, like I really hoped and assumed that someone would send in a Chupacabra story or a La Llorona story. I knew I didn't want like 15 of them. I didn't want everything to just be like alternating Chupacabra, La Llorona over and over again, because I thought that would be pretty boring. So I'm glad that we didn't get too many of them, but we got two, and I think the Chupacabra is a lot of fun. It's also like objectively a more recent legend. Like it really only dates back a couple decades, and there's a lot out there about like where it may have come from. But I thought, similar to Ruben's piece, what V Castro does a great job of taking it in an unexpected direction, of kind of really pushing the appearance of the monster, so to speak, back pretty far into the story. And also, like, you know, making some clear clear political statements as well, and making some clear statements about just basic human rights, which is important too. You know, like I knew that that was going to come through in the pieces that people sent in.
Speaking of making political statements, when I read Indian Blood by Marcos Damian Leon, I saw that as a just straight out critique of the greed, capitalism, and the blood that goes into growing things and making things. But what happens when someone tries to get you to use that blood far beyond what it should be used for? I really absolutely love that story.
Yeah, that's a great story. A nice kind of slow burn about as it builds. Also a great title. That's a really solid one.
So Ruben, I'm going to ask you a question about A Night of Screens in Austin, Texas by Adrian Ernesto Cepeda. I don't know if you read it, but I will ask you this question. If you're hanging out, you come up from the valley, you come to Austin, you're hanging out at a friend's house, maybe you've had a little bit to drink, and somebody invites you to go next door to a house where someone was just murdered, and that house has some screams coming from it, and you can't tell whether it's your imagination that's bringing the screams to you, or is it really going on? Would you go to that house? Or would you immediately become uninebriated, unhigh? Now, for the benefit of audience, this is all fictional. So, but go ahead, Ruben.
So I'll answer that. When I was a kid, and I'm going to bring it back to the legend of La Llorona. When I was a kid in Hidalgo, Texas, which is a border town, we would go and play along the river on Saturdays. And I wrote about this in this Texas Highways essay, but we would go and play down by the river, and it was no big deal. We would just throw rocks and, you know, see how close we could get to the water. Of course, we're on our side, you know, on the northern side. But we always had, our parents would always tell us the age old thing of get home before dark, because if not, what's going to happen, Richard?
La Llorona or something.
La Llorona or something is going to come get you. So they would always say, come back before that. So that was our rule. That was like our one rule, right? And so my cousins and I would go out, and there was one time, and this is a true story, there was one time where I heard a woman crying in the trees and saying, mis hijos, like La Llorona, the legend, right? So to answer your question, Hopeton, the smart thing would have been for me to not go towards that, right? It's time to go home, right? Because I was by myself. I'm by the river, and the legend is, you know, she drowns children.
By yourself. That's scary.
Yeah, I was by myself. But that would have been the smart thing. But my thing was, I'm going to go find out. So I actually walked into the trees looking for where this was coming from. I never found anything. The crying stopped. You know, maybe it was someone playing a trick on me, which is, I tend to think that was probably the case. But so in this instance, I would have to like seriously pray up, you know, get the protection, hedge of protection around me, be prayed up, and I would probably go see what's going on and see if I can help. And that's kind of that in my head, that was like, okay, maybe somebody's in trouble in Hidalgo, the story, maybe somebody was in trouble, or maybe it's a ghost, but I need to go see that. So I would probably head towards it, but again, I'd be prayed up before I did it.
All right, Richard. What would you do? Now, you're a father. I don't know if you're a father, Ruben, but Richard, I know you're a father. Would you go next door? Did you think, because I guess this character is in their 20s, early 20s, and
yeah.
I'm sure we all have stories of some of the crazy things that we did in our early 20s or mid 20s before we settled down. What would you do, Richard?
Yeah, that's literally exactly where my head went when you asked that question, where it's like, I don't think like today in 2023, I would have gone, but we certainly when I was like, you know, anywhere from 16 to probably 30, I probably would have. I mean, like, I remember some friends being like, they started talking about this place they called the accursed ground. I was like, what are you guys talking about? And they're like, there's this patch of land kind of in between some neighborhoods. And every time we're like, we, you know, find ourselves over there, something car breaks down or someone twists their ankle or you see something weird in the woods or this and the creepy things happen. And it was immediately like, oh, well, we should probably go. So we should just go. Let's just go and like check it out, you know?
Well, the only thing I can take credit for is sneaking into the New Orleans World Fair when I was 24. I had to hop a 10-foot fence.
Wow.
With a buddy of mine. And coming down, I broke my hand.
Oh, my gosh.
So that was, and I have to share this with you since we're talking about horror stories, and you know I'm from New Orleans. So there is a horror story about a cemetery. So the St. Louis cemeteries are famous in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. And there is a
story. The above ground.
Right. We have to go above ground because below ground is water, right? So there is a story about a young man meeting a beautiful woman. They have a great time together. And then when he goes back to meet her again over by the cemetery, discovers there's a headstone with her name on it.
Nice. It's a good one.
That's a good one.
So, Richard, would you like to add anything as we get ready to close out on this discussion of A Night of Screams? But why A Night of Screams actually as the title of your collection?
Yeah, the title was hard. It was hard to come up with. You know, I like that it references one of the stories, the one you mentioned earlier, A Night of Screams in Austin, Texas. And it certainly has like a tone. I feel like it really matches the cover, which I really like. I think that I had been trying to play with titles that I think probably, like, I know Arte Publico thought it was just getting too complicated, right? I was like, so what if we call it Heridas Abiertas, which is like a reference to Anzal Duo's quote about the border as like an open wound that is never like healed. And they were like, that's one, really intense, and two, that's in Spanish and none of the stories are in Spanish. Like, we don't want to trick people into thinking it's a bilingual collection when it's not. And I was like, okay, that's probably a good point. And so, yeah, we kind of went back to the drawing board and I threw out a few other more like kind of more graphic titles that were just a little bit too creepy than they thought might make sense. And then we looked at the stories to try to figure out what would be good to go in front of, you know, colon horror stories. So like migrants, Latino horror stories, that doesn't really work. That's like sending sort of message. Yeah, that's not what we want. Indian blood, Latino horror stories. Oh, yeah, that one's not going to work either. Just looking at some other stories, A Night of Screams seemed to fit.
Last thing I do want to mention is the last story in the book, once again, is an attack on Western imperialism, Puerto Rico, 1898. The gods come back to protect the shores. I mean, there is so much history behind American imperialism when you look at Latin America that a lot, the general population does not know the stories of the incredible number of interventions we've had in Latin America. So I won't go off on my tangent here. I was about to. Sorry, guests. Yeah.
No, that's an excerpt from Before We Became a New People, A Novel in Progress by Ibelis Rodriguez, which I knew from the start was going to be the final piece. Because it's the only one set in what really feels like the past. We've got a few Tamales by Jose Alanis set in the future. Between Going and Staying by Lilian Rivera is set in the future. Rubens, I guess, is set in either like a zombie future or alternate universe. But this one, Ivelisse's chapter, is the only one set like way back. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you started to allude to it there, the way it ends and that kind of like alternate past that is really just sort of started to be hinted at and explored. I thought that's like the perfect way to end this.
And she's a brilliant writer. She's got a great collection, Love War Stories. It was a Penn Faulkner finalist, I believe. So yeah, she's anything she writes is going to be good. And she's lovely. She's great to me. I've met her and spent a little bit of time with her. Amazing writer.
Richard Z. Santos, editor of Oneida Screen's Latina Horror Stories, Ruben de Gallardo, the writer of the story, Migrants, love that story. Absolutely love this collection. Richard and Ruben, thank you so much for being guests on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Diverse Voices Book Review. On the second part of this interview, I have Flor Salcedo. She is one of the contributors to A Night of Screams, Latino Horror Stories. Flor was born and raised in El Paso, currently lives in Austin, Texas. And Flor, looks like you've been writing some short stories in that sci-fi fantasy genre. Am I correct on that?
NYA. Well, actually, most of the short stories I write are not that. They're mostly related to more of like where I grew up and just regular fiction. And then everything, novels is where I write mostly YA and sci-fi.
Okay. So let me tell you, you're going to have to help me with the pronouncing. Is it La Llorona?
Yeah, La Llorona. Yep.
Had never heard of that mythical ghost. And let me tell you what I loved, absolutely loved about this story, because I'm a nostalgic interviewer. So any story that reminds me of my childhood, that hits cues of things I can remember, I always get excited about. So you take that ghost story, and then you sort of turn it on its head with real life trauma. That's part of it. And I grew up in the housing projects of New Orleans. And so I remember some of those stories. You know, we had our own ghost stories from the cemetery in New Orleans and then some of the trauma that was happening around me in New Orleans. So what was the source of what I just considered a great mixture of the ghost story with real life trauma?
Well, it was exactly like what you mentioned, growing up in that environment that has these stories that, you know, like for me, it was this folklore that was always around me that parents use to, you know, tell children how to behave to help them, you know, come inside the house, things like that. And then as I grew up, figuring out that, oh my God, people themselves are kind of monsters too. And which is a really sad thing to realize at a young age. But, and so to be honest, that's how this story came upon, because at an early age, I really stopped being scared of these, anything that was folklore, absolutely anything that's supposed to be scary, paranormal, horror. It really didn't scare me anymore. What really scared me was, human behavior that was, you know, unpleasant.
So give us a little more of your bio, because I was searching wide and far and I couldn't find a lot about your background on the web. So tell us a little bit more about your background, other than, of course, you grew up in El Paso. And so tell us a little more about your background, especially your writing background.
Well, I've been writing for a little over 10 years now, and I started with novels. I have been querying forever, and I'm just waiting for the day I'll get lucky, my break, because I'm really seeking the traditional representation. So I've been querying agents, and but at some point I realized that the thing I love, my love, I've always been very technical, and that's why I'm a programmer. I love sci-fi. That's why I write novels that are dealing with mostly science fiction. I do have a very dark thing that's my theme. Everything I write is kind of dark. But at some point, you know, I realized, like most writers, when we wake up, that we're like, oh, this is really a hard journey. It's way harder than I thought. And so to kind of get that quicker fix that you accomplish something, I started writing short stories. And I realized that, you know, like anything, I'm not just a big geek, although I am. I'm a huge nerd. I love everything technical, sci-fi, technology. Obviously, that's not all I am. A huge part of me is, you know, my culture, growing up in the Mexican American barrio of El Paso. And so that's where my short stories started coming in, and it was pretty much everything I kind of wanted to explore my life to, but I didn't have enough energy to put it in a novel quite yet. Although I have been writing now a few novels that are a little bit more mixed like that with sci-fi and a little bit of my culture. But that's pretty much how it started. I started writing novels, and I started getting them published in journals or anthologies.
So the story La Llorona, was that an original story for the collection, or was that a story that you had already written that you contributed to the collection, A Night of Screams, Latina Horror Stories?
So it was a story that I had already written. It was not as polished as it, you know, as it ended up being for this anthology, but I had written it. The story had been in my head for probably three years or so before I actually put it on paper. It was more of a something that I would experience as I would go back home, because I live in Austin, Texas right now, and I go back to El Paso often. I have my family there. My husband's family is there. We go all the time. And so every time I would go back to El Paso, and you know, it hits you, like you forget about how things are where you grew up. And then we would visit where I used to live in the projects, and my goodness, it was like a lot of them weren't even there anymore. They had been taken down. There was a freeway built there. But as I'm there standing, all these memories come back, and it was a mixture. It's like immediate happiness and grief at the same time, because I experienced both things growing up. That's pretty much what happened. I had that story already. Richard, I've been reading Ruben's story. Richard put out the call, and I had the story. I submitted it, but I fixed it up a little more since I hadn't seen it in a while. I was really able to like see like where I was missing more of that emotion that I needed to be okay with putting on there, because it is fiction, but it is truth. It's both. So I had to allow a lot of the truth and some of the grittiness, both in the sadness and the happiness, like actually allow myself to write it better.
So I'm going to quote from your story. The mother of your protagonist, a little girl, I believe she's 8, because the quote is, "You're only 8, muchachita, but think you can be out late. La Llorona might come and get you and drag you to the river." So she's hanging out, running around with her friends, coming in after dark, but her mother warns her. And here's the key. I don't want to reveal too much of the story. Is there is wailing at night.
Right. I mean, it's kind of strange that not just in my neighborhood, I think in many people that grew up around that story. And what I mean that story is that story is not just particular, that folklore is not just particular to Mexico, right? It came up in other Latino, Hispanic cultures. That story has been around. And I think a lot of people do hear it. And, you know, so it's either something that... because you've heard the story, you might be hearing it, or, you know, maybe La Llorona is actually there. You know, we don't know, but yeah.
And the last quote I'm going to use to close this out is, you're right, among the community along the river is where folklore seeped into our lives. Sometimes it came in a good way, like enchanted desert nights. Sometimes it came like dirty water. There's both a positive folklore and there's also negative folklore, I think you're saying.
Right. I mean, there is a lot of things that, you know, when you read them, and folklore, a lot of it, to be honest, it's really the interpreter. And of course, parents would use a lot of the ghost folklore, of course, to try to to try to scare children so that we could behave. But there was also a lot of good stories growing up in my neighborhood and in El Paso and again in other culture that deals with, you know, being Latinos. And so it also, that line is also referencing humanity and not just the folklore, because again, there was a lot of experiences I had growing up that I loved how I grew up in a sense, the freedom of running outside with the kids, the way I felt my community was really closed off. I lived in El Paso. The barrio is, you know, the hood is a very small area, or at the time, that particular one of El Paso. It's like a whole different world from the rest of El Paso. Of course, maybe to outsiders, it's not. They just come in and see everything looks the same to people, but it really is a whole different world. And so I really enjoyed how I grew up, even though there was a lot of other negative things, such as poverty, for example. There was positive things. For one, I didn't really experience this otherness, like people treating me differently. I didn't have people looking at me strangely because I was, you know, my skin color, because I'm Mexican American, because I didn't speak English that well. I didn't enunciate until I leave the neighborhood, or El Paso or Texas or whatever, that then I've experienced some of that, you know. So again, it's both folklore. A lot of the lines in there are actually mixed that I'm referencing to things. I also reference another line that talks about the river being a victim to the crimes, being a witness to the crimes of time. So this river witnessing crimes of time is, again, referencing not just like what people experience with folklore, but in real life, we see a lot of very ugly things happening on the border, particularly, in Texas with the policy and politics and a lot of heartbreak. There's a lot of double meaning in my lines.
Laura Salcedo, she is the author of the short story La Llorona. It is part of the collection of Latina horror stories, A Night of Screams. Richard Z. Santos is the editor of this collection of short stories. Floor, thank you so much for being a guest on Diverse Voices Book Review.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoy coming out and talking about things like this that are important, and this fiction that's important too.
Thank you for listening to Diverse Voices Book Review. I'm Hopeton Hay, host and producer. The theme music is provided by Wright Productions. You can follow the show on social media. Under Facebook and Instagram, it's Diverse Voices Book Review, or Twitter under @DiverseBooksHay.